Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast. Before we dive into today's guest, this episode is brought to you by my masterclass, 3 behind-the-scenes secrets to opening a coworking space. If you are working on starting a coworking space, I want to share 3 decisions that successful operators make when they are designing their coworking space. The masterclass is totally free. It's about an hour, which will include Q&A time. If you'd like to join me, please register at www.everythingcoworking.com/masterclass. And also before we dive in, I want to congratulate the new members of Community Manager University. We have several brand new and seasoned community managers that have joined our program to learn, grow, and connect. If you would like to learn more about investing in your team to help them contribute more deeply to the business and love their job even more, you can learn more at everythingcoworking.com/community managers. And now for today's guest, I interview Angela Garland, who is the founder and CEO of Exit 11 Workspace, Coffee House, and Drive-Thru. So she has had a lifelong dream of opening her own business lounge. She had a very specific vision of what this would look like, and it would include coffee. And she has gotten there, but she has also kind of taken an unexpected path, partly due to just the evolution of where she saw the demand for coffee and the business opportunity, her husband's passion for coffee, and now COVID-19, working through a pandemic and having to prioritize, take the break off of the workspace business a little bit and put the accelerator on the coffee aspect. But I know many of you are interested in how coffee gets integrated into workspace. Angela shares her story around how she got into co-working without taking a bank loan, which I think is also an important aspect for many of us today who are looking at space, looking for, as she calls them, entrepreneurial landlords who had space that was underutilized and were willing to take a chance and help her avoid that bank loan, and then diversifying her revenue streams, which really helped her in the time of a pandemic to maintain a level of income even while her workspace was closed. So I hope you enjoy this conversation today with Angela. Good morning, Angela. I'm so excited to be here with you. You are coming to us today from Washington, Missouri, kind of outside of St. Louis. How far are you from St. Louis for those?
About 40 listening? Minutes.
Okay, yeah. So pretty close. So Angela Garland is the founder and CEO of Exit 11 Workspace, Coffee House, and Drive-Thru. I know. So you have evolved your business model over time, and especially it sounds like because of COVID, you've done some kind of either accelerating or pivoting. So I'm looking forward to hearing your story. I've seen your name for a long time and we've not met. So you've been in the industry for a while. Tell us first about, you know, your background, general background, and then your background in the industry, and kind of weave us through the story of how you opened Exit 11.
Sure. It's a long story.
Yeah, I know. Dive in. We have time. Okay. I have some coffee.
Sure. I know. I need some more, I think. But my mom was actually in the industry, and back then it was called shared office center or business centers. And so in high school, I would go help answer phones or organize supply rooms, et cetera. And so then when I went to college, I went to Mizzou, and as any extrovert, had way too much fun, and then came back home. And so then I worked for my mom's business, and then I went, you know, the community college, got grades up, went back to Mizzou, came in. Anyway, so I finally said, all right, I can't do school right now. So I went to work for her in the industry, and she had owned two business centers. So one of them was with HQ back in the day, and then she opened up an independent one. Anyway, she she decided to get out of the industry. Well, was kind of pushed out, like needing to close. And I am 22 at the time and thinking, I can still buy this. You know, I'm going to buy my mom's business. I was 9 months pregnant with first baby, you know, thinking I could conquer the world.
Okay.
Anyway, so I decided that some wiser person said, this is probably not a good idea because I would be acquiring her debt. Anyway, it was a dream. Like, I know I can do this. So that was, of course, that idea was put on pause and then went back to get an undergrad thinking that once I have an undergrad, then I'll go back into the industry, which I did. So then, so three children in undergrad, finally, there's something about once you're in a grown up and you're like, okay, now I know what I want to do. I have to feed children. So I'll go back to school. So, went full time with HQ at the time. And then I guess that was in 97. And even at that time, I remember thinking, why doesn't somebody come up with a concept where you have like hotel? Cause this is when Kinko's was big. So we had a copy center, meeting center, street level, office space. And at the time, coffee wasn't on my radar, but I always thought, why doesn't somebody just come up with that instead of we're in these high rise buildings? Anyway, I get pregnant again. So,
which you have four children now.
Yeah, four children at this time.
Wow.
So then, yeah, so I decide, so this was before 30. So I had four before 30. Anyway, so then I decided, okay, well, it's not practical. And I was always a numbers person. I'm like, how much do you add for dry cleaning, travel, eating out? Does it make sense? Okay, I'm making like 50 cents an hour. So it doesn't make sense to have a full-time job in a traditional sense. So I knew I needed to create something that was flexible, whatever. So I did consulting and marketing help or whatever. So then when the kids were a little bit older, Regis was expanding in downtown St. Louis. I didn't know why they were going to downtown St. Louis because at that time, no one goes to downtown St. Louis.
Yeah.
No one lives there. And the traditional model for the business center is that you're 5 minutes from home. So you leave home, you go there to work and you're not commuting 45 minutes. So, but I
isn't it funny though, how that was sort of the initial value prop. And then it really kind of swung to CBDs, right? Like,
Right.
And now we're back to this. I know. I mean, that's one of the interesting, you've seen the cycles, of the industry. So anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt your story.
They opened up in 2000 and it was beautiful space, top of the Metropolitan Square, like the 20th floor, 25,000 square feet, gorgeous. But then again, I always knowing I want to open up my own someday, thinking I could. And so I even started working on a business plan, but I thought, okay, I'll have a job, work on a business plan. And
get your side hustle.
while I got four kids and dropping them off at daycare at 7 a.m, picking them up at 6 and doing the math. But I loved, Regis was an opportunity. They do great training and they send you these fabulous places back then.
Yep.
But their sales process was not one that I could resonate with. It did not feel authentic, where they'd say, okay, this wing, just tell people that it's in process. We're working, the Hollywood offices, they would do Hollywood offices, put the newspaper out. And anyway, I guess that's what you have to do to sell things. Anyway, I didn't feel comfortable with it because I knew everyone in St. Louis. I'm like, these people, the jig is going to be up if they keep coming here. And they say like, how long is that space been on hold? And it was in downtown St. Louis. And in my head, I was like, no, everyone lives in the county. No one's going to intentionally drive to downtown St. Louis, try to find a place to park.
Right.
And live in here. They're going to want, anyway. So I talked to my boss at the time and say, I don't feel comfortable with the sales process. She's like, you know what? I know you've always wanted to have your own. Why don't you just go open your own little center? I'm like, well, I would, except I have this non-compete with you all.
Oh.
She's like, we'll let you out of that non-compete. You just go do what you want to do. And they gave me a severance package for like 6 weeks. I'm like, okay. And at the same time, I had, we meet with all the commercial real estate brokers, make friends with them. And one of them reached out and said, hey, they're building a technology park out at this military post, one of which is the shared office concept. Would you go talk to them? I think they need you. I'm like, okay. So I go talk to them and they decide to hire me as a consultant to advise them on this 18,000 square foot business center on a military post. So there would be shared, contractors that come out and are doing deals with the military.
Oh, yeah.
So that was kind of my, all right, well, that's going to pay the bills, gives me time to work on my business plan. So I go to the bank and talk to the president of the bank, which was the dad of one of my friends. I'm like, okay, so I need $500,000 to open up this business center. And he was so nice. He's like, so do you own a home? I'm like, well, no. Do you have any assets? Like, no. You know, so just so oblivious. But anyway, he was nice and coached me and said, you know, maybe you want to start small and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, of course, I don't want to start small ever. But I decided to build the virtual office model. So I thought, okay, let me find space that I could at least do telephone answering and a mail address and all that. So kind of started that and then just did a lot of networking. And when you're networking, you have to specifically ask for what you're looking for. So I finally thought, what am I looking for? An entrepreneurial landlord. Okay. So I literally said that. I'm like, I'm looking for an entrepreneurial landlord. And that was when all the dot-coms had been, were imploding.
Right. So, totally.
This was 2001. Anyway, so there, so this guy said, yeah, then we've got this vacant space. So there was, I think it was about 15,000 square feet, had a conference room and the kitchen and a reception area, 25 offices, all the phones, all the furniture, the internet. I literally just had to move in, carpet paint, and I'm in business.
And some company had just gotten up and left.
They just left. And so
there's one of those in my town right now. Yeah. Every weekend I walk by and I look in the window. Like, same thing, furnished office, all the things. And I just, I'm trying to, I don't know if the landlord's very entrepreneurial though.
Right. So he just said, well, we'll just partner 50-50. You see what you can do. We'll cover the expenses. So you ramp up, whatever. Like, okay.
So he was in. He was like, let's try. Sure.
Yeah. We don't have anything to lose, right?
Right.
If we can make it make money, great. At the same time, so right at, during that time, I'm at Regis thinking, this is when Starbucks was starting to become really popular. And then even when I took over, so that business, the business I started was Office Start Business Centers, is what it was called. And so I would rent these offices and they're paying us $900 a month for the offices. I would go to Starbucks and I would see them having a meeting, sitting on a couch, having a meeting at Starbucks. And I asked them, I'm like, why don't you just use our boardroom? I mean, it's like, I know, but it just feels so comfortable. It's more laid back. Like, all right, whatever. So then that the idea of how do you get meeting space, office space, coffee, copier, all that.
Is, right.
Can we do all that?
Right.
And, so then I start working on that business plan, trying to raise money, blah, 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 do that while I'm running Office Start and while the consulting gig is paying me and while I have four kids. And
right.
But it's flexible because I know hire a receptionist. Back then, it's easy. You hire a receptionist and trainer to do it, and here's how you sell a virtual office and office, and then you can go. So I could have some flexibility. So then – just 2 years into that, I'm at some expo and some guy approaches me and says, hey, would you want to sell your business? I'm like, well, it's like barely started. I'm not paying myself. I probably owe the landlord some money. I don't know.
Right.
Well, there's some people who like the business already up and running and they can just take it to the next level and put some money in it. I'm like, sure, I'll look at it. Why not? And so within 3 months, sold business. So now I'm like, okay, well, I did that. And so then I thought, well, this will be good. I can work on my co-working, which wasn't called co-working. I called it a business club back then. So this is 2004. And I thought it'll also be a good time for me to go back for my MBA. Why? But I just thought that was a good
Angela.
Idea.
Yeah. You know? I'd like to meet your husband who's like, woof.
And what? Well, he's the ex-husband now.
Okay.
He's like, why are you doing that? And I said, well, I don't know. I might want to speak someday or write. And I just think it'll give me credibility. Plus we all have our own stuff with school. You know, now in retrospect, I'd be like, you didn't need to do that. But for a personal, like, I was
totally in that camp. I worked for a bunch of startups before business school. And I remember I had a business partner who like just was scrappy and we would go meet clients. And I had that total imposter syndrome. I was like, we don't know what we're doing. We don't have marketing training. We just made this up. I'm going to get an MBA. And he was like, okay, well, I'm going to make this business and sell it for $1 billion, which he did while I was racking up, you know, business school debt. It's, yeah, I hear you.
Someone called me from my, as an alumna, and said, would I help some of these students? I said, I promised myself that until I pay off my student loan, that I couldn't help anyone else or my kids. But anyway, I could help them. But the good thing about that is I'm still doing the consulting, still making some money. And the guy that bought the business paid me half up front and then the rest was in payments over 3 years. So that was nice. I still have, because that's always important. It's like, you got to make money. And so when you go through an MBA program, like an adult learning, we have a cohort of 16 people. So these are all people of different backgrounds, different mindsets than my crazy entrepreneurial one to have them rip the plan apart. Like, let's look at it. Let's analyze it. Have you thought about this? So it was a couple years of a deep dive into that, practicing presentations. Meanwhile, also, you know, I met with the attorney and had offering documents and really thought that this was the future. I was going to open this business club model that was only 5,000 square feet, and it was going to be all over the world. And if you remember one, you remember it all. Similar to Regis, but Regis had not yet done this part of it. So getting ready to graduate, it's 2006, and I still haven't, I'm not anywhere further along. And I actually had a reporter that was following the story because she was an independent. She wanted to write the story about the day in the life, what an entrepreneur goes through of staying up in the middle of the night to do plans because you got to meet with the banker or tomorrow or whatever. But I started to get to this frustration of this is ridiculous. I've been working on this for 4 or 5 years. No one is getting it. Because even the guys with money, guys or gals with the money, said, I don't get it. I've never been to a coffee shop with a laptop. I think, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah. And back then there was, I think the statistic was 10 million people are working from coffee shops. So
right, right. But the guys with the money weren't picturing it.
No.
Yeah.
Like, this is where we're headed, people. Could you listen to me? So I go onto Regis's website and I start exploring and looking, and I see some verbiage about a business club, and I think, you know what? I bet they're working on something similar. They're smart people. So I reach out to my former boss and say, hey, because I had the website up and everything. I said, could you look at this? Sounds like you guys might be working on it. Maybe we could, there's something we could do. Well, I said, oh, sure. I'll put it up the pipeline. And then weeks go by. I finally decide to reach out to the executive assistant, to Mark Dixon. He's the gatekeeper, you know. Let's see if I can just reach out to her. Anyway, it said, here's what I'm doing. I've talked to, you know, the person, you know, gave the name of the lady I've talked to before. So I don't hear back, and I am frustrated. And I had been reading this book about, called Visioneering, and it was a Christian book about, now I can't remember the character in the Bible. This is really sad, but he's trying to build a wall, and he keeps getting, you know, and God keeps saying, keep going, don't care. You know, this is what you're supposed to be doing, whatever. And it wasn't, I never went into any kind of business, and maybe this is what entrepreneurs are made to do, of saying, ha ha ha, I'm going to be a millionaire. It's more like, I just know there's a need for this. And this
You saw the guys in the Starbucks and you were like, I want them in my space.
Exactly. There needs to be something.
Yep.
And it was, and the original design was, it was like the ones that are out there now. But anyway, so we, where am I? I go to read it. So anyway, I go on a walk. And back then, like, I had a lot of conversations with God. I'm like, okay, I'm done with this. Like, give the vision to someone else. This is exhausting. I can't handle the rejection. Don't want to do it anymore. So you're just going to have to drop a tree on me if you want me to continue this.
Give me a sign. Right.
Give me a sign. Like, yeah. So I go back to my office. I get on my computer. And there's an email from the executive assistant to Mark Dixon that says he wants to talk to you. He's in Paris right now. Can you do a video call next Monday? I'm like, oh, okay. All right. And so then I see my daughter at the time, my oldest was 17 at the time. This is a long journey. So she's 17. I start crying. She's like, what's wrong, mom? And I just said, I don't care if anything ever happened from that moment forward. It was the validation that I was on the right path and that this was a cool concept that was the future. So he says, yeah, why don't you come on out? So they fly me to New York, and I spend all day with Mark in an office with my plan, his plan. We lay everything out. Bup, bup, bup. He's like, okay, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to invest $10 million. We're going to do 20 of these. You'll run the project, and I'll try to protect you as much as possible from the corporate infrastructure. Because at this time, he's on the board. He's on the board, but he's not day-to-day operations. He's the crazy entrepreneur, right?
Yep.
That says, hey, let's do this and do this.
Yeah.
And he knows that when that happens, everyone tries to break it down, redo it, transform, whatever. I said, okay. So he pays me a nice salary. Meanwhile, the reporter's not happy with me because she's
right.
Like,
oh, you ruined the story. Right. Right.
Why'd you do that? I'm like, I don't know. Wait. You can't beat him. Join him, right?
Was so, Regis was public at this time, and they had come out of bankruptcy.
They may have, because they went public the first time I worked for them in 2000 around. And so they may have been out and back.
Yep.
I don't remember. So
I don't think they were in for very long. Out and back. Yeah. Yes. They've been doing this for a long time, and such an evolution. And it sounds like you were
good at it. they do great. You know, yep, the economy's going to hell. Let's do that anyway. So yep. they bring me on, and it does. I'm on it for a year. We still don't open one. But the cool thing is he's flying. I'm getting to go and meet the CEO of Herman Miller and Steelcase. And they're doing all kinds of research and validating it and talking to like the eBays and the Apples of the world. If we build this, will you come? Blah, blah, blah. So I'm getting yeah. to be a part of this really cool experience that I never in a million years would have done yeah. on my own. But I'm stuck in St. Louis in this little office, like trying to communicate to their construction guys, their architects, blah, 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 blah. A year goes by and I'm like, when are we doing this? Meanwhile, we've gotten to go to trips and do whatever. But so I cut to the president of the U.S. division was Guillermo. I forgot his last name, but he was head of the U.S. division. So I asked for a call with him and said, like, hey, mister, what's going on? Like, we were supposed to be opening in Palo Alto and we had a lease, but we hadn't. Nothing. That was going to be the first location. And it looked really nothing like my original vision, but I'm like, whatever. Okay, here we are. They're paying me. So I got
right.
it. So he's like, well, you called. So he gets like a conference call and he's like, well, you called this meeting. What do you want? Basically. I'm like, when are we opening? Like, are we signing the deal? And he said, the economy's getting ready to tank. We've got to pull our chairman or our board wants us to pull out of anything that's not our core concept. But so I think we're going to pay your severance package again. And you should go, if you end up doing this, just let us know. Maybe we'll buy it. So that was the conversation.
Okay. For the second time, Angela, just go do it. It's fine.
And so what I appreciate is that it was a great experience. I'm glad I got to do that. Anyway, so I'm like, okay. And I'm still, so I go back to doing a little bit of consulting. And this is when, and I had a struggling marriage at the time. And this was kind of the straw, you know, when you need the support of this is like totally off the, not what we're talking about, but when you need the support of your mate at that time, that's yeah. when I needed it. Like to say, hey, babe, it's going to be okay. We're here. We go. And he didn't. I'm like, okay, well, then why are you here? So anyway, we fast forward a year of trying to just, you know, meet with other investors and whatever. Meanwhile, the economy is slowly, housing market's going down. We're upside down on our house, blah, blah, blah. And I finally realized that I got four kids to feed. I need insurance. I need to put this concept on the shelf. So in 2008, I went to go work for Century 21 Corporate, which is owned by Realogy. So I was a franchise business consultant. So I learned all about franchising and so I'm the mediator between the franchisee and the franchisor. And of course, each year said, okay, I'm just going to do this for one more year. And then 8 years go by until I finally left. But in the middle there, there's a climb for kids that the CEO of Century 21 would do. And I asked a question one time and said, hey, do any women ever go on this climb? He's like, well, no, but, or he said, we had one last year, but we don't have this one this year. Would you like to go? And I was asking the question just curiosity, like, I don't know how to climb a mountain.
Right.
Anyway, so I signed up to climb the third and seventh highest mountains in North America with a team of five guys. And I got a senior in high school and a eighth grader and two older kids. I'm single. I'm like, sure, I'll do this. But I think it's like with anything. It's like, we want the challenge. We sometimes go into things blindly. So I did. You don't know what you don't know. So just like, you think having a baby is going to be a piece of cake? It's like, oh yeah, no, I'm talking about
but you had four of them.
I just blind it out. But anyway, so there we are. So it was after that experience. And also along the way, my kids are saying, they're watching the news and seeing WeWork and it's growing. And it's frustrating when you see that. You're like, oh, it doesn't really matter. So you have the idea. So what? If someone else was better at putting all the pieces together. And I realized my biggest fear was asking for money because I didn't want to, because my mom had lost money to family and friends by her business failing.
Yep.
I don't ever want that feeling of owing people money and that they take a risk. But I understand an investment, that's what they do. I wasn't mentally accepting of that. So anyway, I decide, and I had the conversation with him, at the president of the Century 21 when we're on the trip, and said, told him my dream. And he's like, well, why don't you just start working on it, disclose it to HR, work on it, and, you know, then open your first one and then go from there. I'm like, okay. So it's kind of like the CEO said, give me permission to be who I'm.
Right.
So I did, you know, because when you work, that was a home-based, it was a, the business consultant was I worked from home. So I did have lots of flexibility. And as an entrepreneur, we were able to, a lot of times when it comes to traditional work, traditional workers can't comprehend how you can get what you're getting done because you have laser focus. You're like, yeah, I think I can do 40 hours in 2 days. Yep.
Yep. So you have a different why. It's just, yep.
Right. I work on it. We're on the plan. Keep going. Apply for grants, blah, blah, blah. And then an old friend of mine says, hey, there's this place, there's this building in Washington, Missouri. It's got a lot of vacancy. My boss just bought it not too long ago. I shared your idea. Would you consider Washington, Missouri? I'm like, Washington, Missouri. Okie dokie. It's 14,000 population. Don't know a single soul. I'm like, I'll go look at it. And I wasn't crazy about it, but I thought, you know what? If I can make it work here, because that's the model, right? It's easy to open something where you know everyone and everyone loves you. And
right.
I mean, in St. Louis, I've been talking about this for a decade or more. And so people would just come because they like me, you know? But there, I have no reputation, nothing. So I thought, okay, if I can make it work there, I can make it work anywhere. And any small town would be a good test. And again, entrepreneurial landlord who said, hey, we'll help you with build out and a small loan and let's see what we can do. So then that's where I think I had more hope than brains because I thought I could so make this happen. It took a year before the town even said, okay, you're here for good. Because in a small town and everyone lives there forever, there's a lot of people who come in from the outside, they open up a shop, they sell stuff, and then they go back to their St. Louis and they spend their money. So there's this idea of you want our support, well then you should be eating, drinking, shopping in this community. And no one ever said that, right? But it's true. So anyway, I joined the Rotary, joined the Chamber, get involved, host all kinds of events. I had one office tenant, renegotiate with the landlord. Like, oh, remember that? And then, so the first pivoting I did was my friend was the property manager. And she wasn't very good at it. I said, you are not a property manager. And she's like, yeah, I know. I don't like it. And I'm not, it's not my favorite thing to do, but I knew we could do it. And my husband, my second husband, get married in 2015. We opened Exit 11 in August. We got married in February, opened in August. And I like signed the lease like a couple months after we got married. He's like, what are you doing?
I'm yeah.
Like, excuse me, but I've been working on this for 18 years. Right. So too bad, mister. He's like, okay, but we're married now. And so we should probably talk about these things before you sign a lease for 5 years. Like, okay, I'll do that next time, promise. So, I'm like, you got to come with me. And so he was very supportive. And I kept the Century 21 job for the first year and a half. So he kind of, but I could work from the office remotely.
Right.
So that first 6 months, it's not moving fast enough. And the landlord had also invested in a restaurant in this building. So this is a 55,000 square foot building. So the lower level had a restaurant and it didn't work. And it was a cafe in the day and a bar at night. And there was this espresso machine sitting down there. And so we were just doing Flavia, like self-serve.
Oh yeah. Yep.
And I knew the vision was I wanted to have like a Starbucks or a Caldi's or whoever placed in there.
Yep.
But I wasn't going to necessarily be in the coffee business, but I just knew that needed to be a part of it. But we couldn't afford to do that when we did the build out because you got to buy, $5,000 refrigerators. And so this is a high-end espresso machine. Scott, my husband, looks at it and he's like Mr. Mechanical and examines the whole thing and researches it. It's figured out. He loves coffee, whereas I like a latte, but he was the coffee guy.
Coffee, and yeah.
So watches every YouTube video on how to be a barista, visits every coffee shop, asks tons of questions, does all this research. And he's like, and he said, let's just see if this works. And so we start making lattes. We open up the space to the public.
Did you borrow the machine?
Yeah,
from the restaurant?
Yeah, whatever you want to do. I mean, this is like back to like, if you got equipment sitting there, sure. We'll work out the finances later. Go see if you can sell something from it. So, so the coffee part of it became popular, but the building has a lot of medical space and there's no place to park. And it wasn't, it's not, you don't say, hey, I want to go open up a coffee shop in an office building.
Yep.
It just is not. So we were making do. So I'm very much of a bootstrapper. It's like, okay, what else can we do? What else can we sell? How else, you know, because people didn't understand. I was like, I was from an alien planet and no one knew what co-working was. I'm like, okay, So it's been around for a long time, but co-working itself since 2009, we're in 2015, but it's a small town. So they didn't.
So this was 2015.
This is 2015.
Yeah.
And so the membership model, people weren't understanding it. Yep. Offices, yes. Meeting rooms, okay. And so we started to push the meeting rooms. There's a lot of industrial companies. So we started doing offsite lunch and learns, all that. So by 2016, the coffee is becoming popular. And well, we thought now it's really popular. we're selling $100 at the lattes, you know, whatever. So we start exploring some of the drive, like Scott and I visit coffee shops all the time. And that's when we were dating, we would go to coffee shops. So we just like the feel and whatever. So a guy that we met along the way had a trailer. There was a one-sided drive up that he would literally just take to the VFW hall every morning and sit there from 5 to 10, sell whatever coffee he could and come back.
Mm-hmm.
In 2016, so I would go visit my daughter, who's living in Seattle at the time. And I see these little drive-through kiosks everywhere, these little bitty buildings. I'm sure you've seen them all over. I'm like, wow. And I'm outside Mount Rainier and I'm like, what's the population of Mount Rainier? And I think it was 6,000 or 8,000. And there was 8 drive-through.
No.
Eight. Like, how do these all, every single one of these make money? Well, most people, when they open up and I'm not diminishing this, but a hobby shop, let's say, or a quilt store or a furniture store, it's because they're passionate about it. They want to make enough living and they just are having fun. Just
they
like
want to do
shops. It. People open up coffee shops because they think it's going to be fun and I'm retired and I don't need to make a lot of money and it's okay, whatever. So I want to make money and I want to build, I like building models.
Yeah.
And so when we saw that, came back, and that's when we started researching the drive-through trailer, because if the cost of getting up brick and mortar is going to be $250 to $300, just
even for a kiosk.
This drive-through. So we did that. So this is 2018. We finally, you know, we go talk to landlords on their parking lot, like, hey, would you want to, can we rent our parking lot? So we rent the parking lot, find a guy that'll rent his parking lot. And
like a couple of spaces in the parking lot.
It takes 10 spaces. But this
okay.
So what's funny is this is an old abandoned gas station on a gravel lot that's been on the market for years.
Okay.
And it's across from a graveyard on a side road. And the drive.
Angela, this traffic, sounds amazing.
Drive-through traffic's like 11,000 up and down the street. So we did like a lease purchase option. Like, hey, we'll see if this works. And he's like, again, if it's an entrepreneurial landlord, they're like, sure.
Yeah.
Whatever, dude.
If you
put the trailer there. And
right.
And so we, within the first few days, we're selling as much coffee from there, of course, as we were at the coffee house.
Yeah. Because location. Yeah. Yeah.
So within that first year, I've always known that I always wanted to duplicate this model in Washington. And it's not like, and my husband gives me a hard time. He's like, that was never going to make any money. I'm like, it was always going to make a little bit of money. And then you multiply that times 10. Like, it's not like I was going to be, we were living a high life with one little bitty business center in Washington, Missouri. So at the same time, our meeting space is taking off. So 2018, then 2019, I built an 800 square foot meeting, additional meeting room, because there's lots of demand for that. So it's like, okay, if people don't want to be members, because I have like 10 members. And then you're like, if you also have free Wi-Fi and they can buy a latte and spend $5 a day, why are they being a member? Because they didn't value the office part of it. They just thought, I'm just coming here, I want to get some work done. But then it started opening up. And this is the hard part, as you would appreciate with a business center, is my shtick at the very beginning, my presentation back in 2000 were, you'll be served by a concierge and a blazer rather than a punk in an apron. This is going to be professional.
Yep.
And so it's going to set us apart. So you don't have to worry about, there's no kids, there's no teenagers and no toddlers. That's why you don't do that. So here we are. We have mom's clubs, Bible studies, political conversations, business people. I mean, it doesn't matter. Everyone comes in, which is cool. So there's this community aspect in the front of the house, which is about 1,000 square feet. And then the traditional offices, there's only 10 of them, plus the meeting rooms. But because it's a community, people are in their offices. They walk out into the coffee shop. They run into somebody they went to church with and high school with and whatever. And everyone who's rented an office here knows that it's there. You're walking through this coffee shop, which was originally just supposed to be the workspace area. The co-working space. So anyway, so we decided the drive-through model is where, so we started seeing the numbers there. I thought, okay, this is the drive-through model is where it is. So we start to look for other options. So last year in 2019, we met with a guy that was a former neighbor who does franchising. And then, so we pulled back from that a little bit, but we just met with him again last week. So anyway, during COVID, so we are at we got to a peak with, so we opened the drive-thru, we keep working on the second location. We opened a second location about 7 or 8 miles away in another small town. And so now we've gotten this brand, like my ex at 11.
Nice.
You know, you have this following of people who are like, you're going to come to Union, Missouri. It's like the special, like, you're going to be here. And there's a Starbucks inside Target. And in 2008, there was a Starbucks drive-through, but that's when they closed like 600 stores across the country.
Okay. Because, and that one went.
Yeah. Same thing. Economy. And then if it wasn't doing a certain, but we were able to find out the volume that it was doing, you know, $3,000 a day, Starbucks closes, right?
Because they also have. Not good enough for Starbucks. Totally fine for exit 11.
Yeah. 15 people there. And I called a friend of mine who works at Target. She's a higher level person at Target, just to say, can you give any kind of a ballpark on how the locations inside Targets are doing? And she gave me those numbers because no one in the coffee business shares their numbers. So I went to Coffee Expo, whatever. That's, I'm forgetting the name of it.
But like a trade show?
Like a trade show. So we went to that before we opened up the drive-thru, and then we went again after we opened up the first drive-thru, and then hearing the numbers that the profit margin in a traditional coffee shop is 2 to 3%. Like, that is nothing. And that the average coffee shop does about $250,000 in revenue. This is the average coffee shop across all planets.
2 to 3%?
Yes, because they've got the overhead, I mean, the cost of goods, the, anyway,
so you're, yep.
And as you know, the base shouldn't be more than 50%. It shouldn't be more than like your cost of goods and your payroll. Anyway, so we're thinking, I guess we're doing pretty good because our overhead, we quickly realized that this 1,000 square feet that we have to wash dishes, clean up after, they suck up the internet, they leave their trash, blah, blah, blah. And there's the drive-thru where they take their trash with them.
Like, right.
They're there for 30 seconds to a minute and they go. And then the perception I think with higher end coffee shops is that a drive-thru would cheapen it. Like, well, you can't possibly do you can't do anything organic and whole and real and out of a drive-thru. You just can't. Where we figured out a system where you can do that and do a lot of prep beforehand. And then in 2019, we also found a shared co-op for roasting. So we said, okay, let's start roasting our own. So that saved us money. And then we said, my husband's name is Scott. His nickname used to be Scotty's. So people love Scotty's dogs. People love dogs, just like babies. So it's like, let's create a brand called Scotty's Coffee. So we launched that a year into it too, which is a whole other revenue opportunity that is waiting. That can be.
Because now you do retail coffee. People can buy. Yep.
So they can come to the drive-thru and say, yeah, I want a pound of whole bean Ethiopian, and we sell it right out the window. They can also come to the coffee shop. So trailer number two is 8 foot longer, has a built-in bathroom. So it's maxed out. And that one actually does sit on a parking lot, taking up 10 spaces on a parking lot where there's a Mexican restaurant and all kinds of stuff. So, and it's not like parking it. It doesn't move. It's there.
Yeah.
So you're tied into the super truck.
You're not parking it. It stays there. It's
more like it. And so the model is, it looks cute, like a food truck, but it's not. It's got a small footprint, which people love, and it's drive-thru. So going back to what I was saying, pre-COVID, we thought, okay, this is a good amount, our baseline number. And when I did projections, I'm like, let's use that. That's a normal projection. So anyway, we had just opened Union on March 13th. And then that following week.
March 13th.
Shut down all restaurants, blah, blah, blah. And I kept going back to the CDC to say, are we really an essential business? Like, are we an essential business? Because I didn't want it to look like we were taking advantage or anything. It's like, nope.
For the workspace or for?
The drive-thru.
The drive-thru.
The workspace had to close. Didn't have to, but I guess, but it did. So we thought, okay. And up to that point, we had a couple young moms who said, I now have to go homeschool. So like, okay, do what you got to do. And then a couple of other kids at the drive-thru that said, I just don't feel comfortable. I want to go work home. I'm like, okay. So that's why closing the workspace and coffee house, people, members and tenants could still get in, but the coffee shop part is closed.
Yep. Through the retail aspect of it.
But I was able to shift those people. I thought, oh, I'll just shift the coffee shop and workspace people over to the drive-thrus. Well, then they quit too. So I'm like, okay, now we need to hire. And we were opening up the new location. So we needed 5 or 6 new people in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah.
Trying to train them on how to be a barista. And then also thinking, oh, we've got to wear gloves and sanitizing.
All the safety protocols. Yeah.
Not handling cash and blah, blah, blah. But you know, the Square app, it has the, well, we've never used the wireless. We always just take the card and swipe it. So then we started just handing in the little box out the window. And they've put up this touchless. They're like, this is the coolest thing. So that became like, okay, it is safe to go there. We are 6 feet away. We're smiling. And so it became this place of, I've got to get out of the house. People would say like, I have not been anywhere in a week except here. Like, this is like, they get their happiness and then they go back home. But I'm like, what are we doing today? They're like, we're just driving. We just had to get out. And so it be, and then the people's work patterns change. So normally in the drive-thru, we'd be 80% of our production would be in the first 2 hours. And then the rest of the day, trickle, trickle. Well, now it's all day long. I mean, sure, there's peaks in the morning, but people's traffic patterns are off and then schools are closed and parents are homeschooling.
Yeah.
And so the Washington doubled in production.
No, because that's also interesting. I mean, the Starbucks are totally
different.
They're
all shutting down. So
I mean, closed, but even those, ours was still doing mobile orders only, kind of similar, but it was very certainly not the friendly local barista experience. It was like grab and run, like, you know, felt sort of, but I mean, their volume had to have just plummeted.
Yeah. And they were, and because, so my daughter, my youngest, works at Starbucks in Springfield, Missouri.
Okay.
So she's there and she's like, well, they offered about a couple weeks before it really hit where we are, that she said they're offering to continue to pay people if they don't want to come to work. But anybody who wants to stay at work, they'll pay $3 more an hour.
Wow.
So what happens with college kids, if you say we'll pay you and you, for not working, is they all choose to not work.
Not work.
Except for my kid who says, I'll make the $3 extra. So all other Starbucks in Springfield closed except for hers. And then eventually they had to close it because they didn't have anybody to work it.
Yeah.
So while I understand where Starbucks is coming from to protect employees.
Yeah.
But it ended up being a, I ended up hurting them, I think, by saying, let's come up. So we're in the meantime saying, well, should we close it? Should we not? How do we do it? And having this drive-through experience where they order, they place the order at the, and to our face. So there's no like box they talk to. They just pull up and we, they wait there and we visit with them and everybody knows their drink. So there's this great experience. So anyway, that, so what, so Union is, was moving along and so was Washington. And now, but we thought, okay, you know, basically our entire competition's been shut down. So of course we're going to be, because the other coffee shops in town are not drive through. They did try to do some like the grab and go or curb service. Starbucks inside Target had to close. So we thought, oh, this will be, there'll be an opportunity to wow those people, but also just expect that once things go back to semi-normal, they'll go back to their old habits, blah, 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 blah. So we gained about 2,400 new customers in that 45 days. And so, which I love about Square, gives you all these stats.
Well, also, Angela, it also, do you have their email also?
If they've given it to us. So we have probably 14 or 15,000 in our database of customers. Now those could be, but about 2,500 of them we have email addresses on so that we can say, communicate with them.
Yeah.
So that, so once Starbucks opened and everything else is back open, we are, we're the same. So we have kind of flatlined at the new rate, which showed us that what's possible, because I think you, we get to like, wow, I think this is our max. This is what we do.
Yeah. You had it in your head, like we're doing pretty well compared to, and then you saw like, oh, what pretty well could be.
Yeah.
And it was much higher than you thought it was.
And I think part of it is a lot of, I mean, I know I strongly believe in the Michael Gerber, you know, work on your business, not in your business. But here, if you don't know the business, if we did not, Scott and I did not know how to be a barista and how to, you know, make the burritos and do everything, I don't know that we could have sustained it. So we had to. I mean, Scott and I are, we're at any, and I think the employees appreciate that because they know when I come in there and I'm working the window, they're like, oh, the owner's here, oh my gosh. But it's like, I will dive in and do whatever we need to do to keep moving forward. And
sleeves are up, you're in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you need to be, I mean, yeah. I love that book too, by the way. I'll mention that in the show notes.
Before I opened up Office Start, my uncle had me read that. And he said, it is set it up as if it's going to be franchised, even if you don't ever do it.
So. Totally. Yep. Which it sounds like you might. What's on the horizon for Exit 11?
The office center, the co-working space and the coffee shop are cool and hip, and it would be great to duplicate that model. But right now, and I do believe that co-working space and meeting space will have an uptick.
Yeah.
We just have to get through this phase because people will be like, okay, my company has realized I can work from home. Okay. So the general office space market will implode.
Yeah.
But co-working and meeting space will be like, I still have to get away from my kids and my dog for an hour for this conference call. Or we had a group, an industrial group that rented our room a couple weeks ago. And it's this huge room, but they said we need to be 6 feet apart. And so we set the tables apart. And there was only a team of like 8 to 10 people in there, but they needed their leadership to get together.
Yep.
And they said, we're still wearing masks. So we wore masks as we brought them pastries and coffee and all that. So it's like, we'll do whatever, you know, and I know we're different because we're in the Midwest and half the people are wearing masks, but it's like, we will honor whatever it is that.
Their preference. Yep. And Angela, quick question about that. You didn't change the price of your meeting room because it was at half capacity.
What do you mean? Like, no.
You didn't reduce your meeting room price because they said, oh, we're only bringing, you know, half the people that can fit.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I've heard a lot of people say that. Like, nope. I think you're thinking about it the wrong way. People need the room. They'll pay.
The room no matter what. So.
Yeah.
Because there is a smaller room that seats 8 to 10, but.
Right. I don't want that. Exactly. Yep.
And it's interesting when you and I, before the call started, talking about landlords, it's that because we now, since we manage the building, still. So a lot of the tenants reached out and said, will the landlord offer concessions or whatever? And so we just said, yep, do what you got to do for the next couple months. We can always add it on the back end, you know, or start, you know, pay rent this week or this month plus a little bit. But I've also had four company tenants up for renewal. So I did the same thing. Like, okay, we are going to increase because they have been below market for all this time. And the guy's like, most people are lowering the rent. They're not.
Hey, lady, not going to happen.
Like, you know what? I better just like status quo, please renew. You know?
Right. Yeah. Totally. So you're the point of contact for the property.
Yes. So we
I mean, that's an interesting role and the landlord probably loves that.
Because we have an on-site property manager and the building tenants, I think, love it. So I have to be careful that I don't give us extra privileges. And I always tell my husband, I'm like, you park in the lower level, honey.
Right. You can't park up front.
he's got mechanically inclined. So he oversees all of the any maintenance issues and hires whoever.
Okay. Interesting.
So we have a team here. So I have, I think I have 21 employees now, which is weird for me to say that, but.
Yes, Angela, that makes you a CEO. Just saying.
And this core group, because, well, the bottom line is, do you ever watch Marcus Lemonis from The Prophet? It's a reality show, but he goes in to help small businesses. He talks about it's processes, people, and product are the three
keys. Yeah.
I had a friend telling me to watch it forever, and I'm finally like, wow, Scott and I watch it, and you have to pay for it like on Netflix, but it's totally worth it. It's like a whole
Making note.
So he would come into our business and say, you need to shut down the co-working space and coffee.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense. You're wasting energy, blah, 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 blah. I'm justifying it in that because we are the property manager, I need somebody here on site. Because I need a receptionist for the tenants, if that same person can also make a latte between 8 a.m. and 2 p.m. and serve some pastries, why not for now? And I have to have the space because my marketing, you know, we're doing marketing.
You need an office. Yeah.
We're doing everything here. Anyway, I need an office because I can't sit in the trailer and do work. So this will restore all of our backup. So we are now having bigger problems that I never imagined. And now, because I've been an expert. Oh, this is a sideline. When I go to first open up in 2015, I tell the IT guy, because I haven't been in it since 2007. I'm like, yeah, I need some Cat 5 cable. And I told him, like, this thing. He's like, okay, please don't ever say that again. I just, like, you don't do Cat 5 cable anymore, apparently. Like, but I was, you know, for the telephone, everything is voice over IP, but I was trying to let him know that I knew what I was talking about. But,
oh, got it.
Not
right.
Not that he changed so much.
Yeah.
Okay. But in general, I understand a lot about the workspace industry.
Yep.
And the frustrating part about the coffee industry is it's deep. I mean, you are selling pencils. I mean, like my husband said, we are selling $5 at a time.
Yeah.
Whereas I rent an office.
Right. $1,000 at a time, whatever.
Yeah. Good. And I just collect your money.
Yep.
And I check in. Are you good? Okay, good.
Right.
That's all I got to do. So I'm learning, like, I mean, the cash business. Like, I don't know. I haven't been in the cash business. What's the best? I don't know. I had an accountant say, you better follow this process. I'm like, can I just, like, round up? Do I have to really give them all their change? I mean, can I just give them more change?
It's got to balance, Angela. So the workspace and coffee model, do you believe in it in another location?
Yes, and I believe in it. What I found out about here is that it's cute because when people are coming in and touring, like business folks come in town, they introduce Exit 11 as the WeWork for our community, which I think is huge. So they're like, we've taken it, and I think both with the drive-through model and the co-working coffee shop model, work in small towns, and no one is focusing on small towns. Like a Starbucks is not going to go into a small town.
Yeah.
A WeWork is not going to go into a small town, but there's still that demand, and there's still lots of entrepreneurs and people working from home.
Yeah.
And I tried to do this when we first opened here, is find somebody who's connected in the community to be my center manager. And I hired the wrong person and quickly realized I can't afford to pay someone right now to be that person. I'll have to try to be that person. But in the future, that's that key role because it's the key role anyway, even in big cities.
Yeah.
But if they know everyone in town and everyone in town trusts them, then they will come to see what it's about.
Yeah.
And it is, it's exciting to see that this model is, there's always this demand. It just keeps evolving, and the riskiest part is taking on the space always. So if you can, which I think is what Regis has partners with landlords to say, I can't be on the hook for 50,000 square feet until a certain point, until we ramp up or revenue share. So,
but I love, I mean, you found, we talk about this there, and I love that you're sharing this because I think there are people doing, and you may not have had full on, you know, sort of management agreements, but the way you described it as entrepreneurial landlords willing to help with the build out, give you some room to ramp up, you know, whatever that looked like so that you could get into the space without, I assume, going to the bank and getting your $500,000 to plus loan.
Yeah.
Hard to get under many circumstances, right? People struggle with that even when they own their home. And so, well, now you own the home, so sign it away, Angela.
Yeah.
Then you got to get the husband to sign off on, you know, on that. I mean, it's a big deal. So, you know, we don't hear a lot of sort of the local stories of people finding the entrepreneurial landlord. And so to me, that's really, you know, it's a nice ray of hope in it.
Which is also with the drive-through model, if you go to a broker, the broker is not going to be interested, like, because it's for sale, for lease, whatever.
Yeah.
They're not going to be interested in talking to us. Like, oh, whoop-de-doop, $1,000. And you're going to have to do what? To the parking lot? I don't get it. So they're going to even get to the owner. So you have to somehow, you know, you do this digging and research to find out who the owner would you? And what I love about my husband is he'll just see if they're standing out on the parking, on the property, and just walk up and talk to them. Right. Like, good old boys. Like, yeah.
He's like, they got to show up at some point, and I'll just be there. And yeah.
But I think people give up because they think they have to raise that money. And so you have to be smart about it. Like, I've always had to have some kind of income. Even when I opened office chart, it's like, I'm not paying myself. You don't get to pay yourself, people. So you have to make money somewhere else or have a partner that is helping to fund the family while you build it. And also think in multiples, unless, of course, you're at the end. Unless you just want a hobby, which some people want a hobby. Because even co-working space, there's that certain threshold of, and I don't know what the stats are now, but it used to be like 60% occupancy before you even break even, right?
Yeah. So totally. Yeah.
And sometimes it can take a while to get there. So you have to be patient.
So you, speaking of patience and persistence, I mean, you hung in there for a long time pursuing this. What would you tell somebody who's got a dream similar to yours?
I think there's, you know, Mark Victor Hansen and Jack Canfield, their Chicken Soup for the Soul books, right?
Yep.
So Mark Victor Hansen had an audio series that I listened to back in 2004 called Dreams Don't Have Deadlines. Mm. So he used the example of, you know, an 85-year-old woman who starts a dance school or a retired doctor who decides to go teach or do whatever. And that we think, especially as a young woman, I would see like this woman with 18 children on the cover of Fortune magazine. She created this whole thing. I'm like, oh, that should be me. Like, oh, I should have done, you know, or you get in the business journal, it's like the 40 under 40, the 30 under 30. And you're just disappointed because like, we're so hard on ourselves. Like, how come I didn't get there? So you think we're in such a hurry. We got to do it all by the time we're 40, make our millions, and then we can retire when we're 43. And it's okay. And there's no way I could have, like, I think about had I opened the business with my ex-husband at the time that I was wanting to, it would have gone, it wouldn't have worked. And so there is that, it's, and I've had other ideas, you know, we have all kinds of ideas. Like there was, I mean, I can't even go into all of them, but I think of it something that is continues to resonate with you and is still there and you keep, and won't go away. You have to continue to pursue it and find ways to make it happen. And it's interesting to me that people will say, oh, is it because you're female, you weren't able to raise money? I'm like, no, because I didn't have the tools that I needed and I didn't have to go that route. And so I've worked really hard to do the bootstrapping it's not fun sometimes, but it feels better if you don't get to pursue it all the way. And really landlords, I think there are, changing the mindset, which is why I went to Regis of, if I can just have a little piece of something big, I'm okay than having to own all of it. And so that's where we are with the whole idea of franchising. Is that Scott and I like the idea of like, let's just open three or four of these, it makes a great living and go on our way. But then now to be able, and I think being in the drive-through business now, if it has a low overhead, unlike other franchises, and it's in the drive-through business, why not create a living, a great living for other couples, you know, millennials or a retired couple, or this is the next step and we get to share that. And we had a discussion with a couple of other husband, wife partners about the ego, because my ego is tied into this. So when it's funny, because when women will come and they're like, yes, I was talking to the owner of the business. And I'm like, you mean my husband? I'm the owner of the business. We're co-owners, but there's this like, I birthed this thing before this person ever came on this planet, but he's getting the credit. And he's not. It is my own. He's like, I'm not taking credit anywhere. I'm just like selling coffee, you know. But so anyway, that's a whole other side thing. We're going into business with your husband is you have to part, you know, husband. Anyway, it's been quite interesting.
I'm sure.
We've learned a lot.
Yeah. But there are, I mean, I think that's common in franchises is there are husband wife teams that, right, are looking for a lifestyle business and want something they can do together that's appealing to both of them. Mm-hmm. And I love this model to your point, and it gives opportunities to people in smaller communities where other franchises may not be quite as viable.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, we're special enough to have this. Thank you. It's like, I guess what McDonald's used to experience when they first started going into
rolled into it. Yeah, totally. What is the Exit 11? Where does the name come from?
So the original name was Express Office Center, so XPRESS, and it was going to be nicknamed Expresso. But the problem is back then, if you don't have the web address, and it's too hard for people to figure out because it was XPRESS-O.com. So I was on, I've always had this thing with 11s, and so if I see 111, 211, 1111, just that number all the time, I just said, okay, I'll say, every time I see it, I'll say a prayer of gratitude or something because I don't know. But it's not really, anything other than I was on a road trip in 2009 and driving back and like, I've got to change the name. I've got to come up with something else, and racking my brain. And I stop at a gas station and I see this massive billboard and all it has on there is exit 11. Like, that's it. There's like, I'm like, what's at exit 11? So then I get on the highway and I start to see sign after sign after sign, literally sign that says exit 11, hospital, exit 11, restaurants, exit 11. So I'm like, why not? Why not exit 11? And it ends up tying in because the 11, they're parallel. You've got multiple businesses going on. Exit off the main interstate to a side road or a small town. And then, so it ends up working at the beginning. People are like, I don't understand. It's like, well, neither did Starbucks was like the nickname of a character in Moby Dick. It has nothing to
right.
do with
it. Right. It doesn't. And yeah.
Then, you know, or Kinko's was the nickname of the guy with kinky red hair. So as long as it's memorable. And I had friends who knew me for a long time and knew of the concept. They're like, oh my God, I hate that name. That's horrible. I don't know what to tell you.
Oh, I think it's totally memorable. I used to always see it on the GWA list and it always caught my eye for some reason. So it's interesting. Totally. Angela, we are out of time for today. Thank you for sharing your story, long but interesting. And I think inspirational because you had this dream for a long time and it sort of took its turns and you had a lot of interesting experiences along the way. And I feel like you're just getting started again.
I know. And then, then I look at my age, I'm like, okay, I can't think about that.
No, but in a fun way. I mean, you've had successes and you've had experiences that lots of people would love to have and learned. I mean, it feels like you're a lifelong learner. You love to learn new things and experience new things. And you're about to dive into this drive-through coffee business. Yeah.
Well, and then my daughter lives in Chicago. She's my marketing and digital stuff for me. So it's like the kids are now becoming, and my oldest daughter she's a barista and helps me with the accounting and all that. So they are now coming into it. So it's exciting.
And it's also just kind of a good story, which is part of the reason I had reached out is, you know, you've got kind of a few different things going on. And so you've kind of put the brakes on the workspace for a little bit and amped up the coffee space for a little bit. And so I think that's also a little bit of a lesson is some variety in the business model and the income, because it allowed you to just kind of shift gears and not completely fall apart. So, and your relationship with a landlord, also a big deal.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome.
Does anybody else would have said bye-bye? We're closing the doors.
I know. So, right. Yeah. Exactly. Anyway, well, we can't
wait
to hear.
Thank you for the opportunity. This has been great.
Yeah. Appreciate love to hear your story and look forward to seeing the evolution of the new business. So.
Well, thank you, Jamie. Bye.